Welcome, friends, to Psalm 15, an incredibly challenging psalm that is prayed and sung in response to the dilemma posed in Psalm 14 and the deep need for salvation to come out of Zion. Let me explain. If you're like me, you weren't raised to read and pray and sing the Psalms contextually, connecting them together to shape your thinking, your praying, and your worship. I was originally taught that the book of Psalms was an anthology, organized much like a collection of hymns. But later in my Christian walk, I discovered the Psalter's intentional shape, with the Psalms placed not just into five books with an introduction in Psalms 1 and 2 and a conclusion in Psalms 146 to 150, but also stitched together with thematic seams between successive groups of Psalms. These themes explore problems that raise questions and shape quandaries that require Yahweh to give His divine response. These themes drive the Psalter forward, wrestling with Yahweh for His intervention as Israel's only means of salvation. This is why the Psalms have pride of place as the prayer book of the faithful during the post-exilic period. As God's people reflected with Yahweh on the Torah and the prophets, the returned exiles wrestled with God over their ongoing captivity to ruling powers like Persia and Greece, not to mention the problem of Israel's own unfaithfulness. How would Yahweh keep His covenant promise of steadfast love to redeem Israel and through Israel to redeem the nations of the world? His own name and His own righteousness were at stake, along with the salvation of Israel and the world. But through the Psalms, God's people learned to wrestle unashamedly with this dilemma, calling God Himself to covenant faithfulness, ultimately finding hope in His name Yahweh alone. So with this in mind, let's dive into Psalm 15, a psalm of David. Verse 1. Lord, who may dwell in your sacred tent? Who may live on your holy mountain? Can you feel the emotional weight of this question? It arises out of the problem raised in Psalm 14 that the Apostle Paul also picks up in Romans 3. When the Lord looks down from heaven on all mankind to see if there are any who understand, any who seek God, what does He see? Psalm 14 told us that God sees all have turned away, all have become corrupt. There is no one who does good, not even one. This is damning. Does God really mean this? That even the best in Israel, like Moses and David, are corrupt and fail to do good? But yes, that's what the biblical story shows us. Moses wasn't able to enter the promised land because he hit the rock out of his own anger instead of speaking to it as God commanded. Likewise, King David failed when he chose adultery and murder instead of faithfulness to Yahweh. What then can be done? So let's stop here for a minute to unpack Psalm 15's opening questions so we can feel the full force behind them. Lord, who may dwell in your sacred tent? What is this sacred tent? Who may live on your holy mountain? What is this holy mountain? Does it refer to Jerusalem, where Solomon had built the Lord's temple to replace the tabernacle, the mobile tent of meeting, that God had given Israel at Mount Sinai? Another holy mountain of God? These are good places to start. But, like signposts, they are intended to point backwards and forwards, beyond themselves, to something greater. Pointing backwards, when we take a look at the designs of the tabernacle and temple, we see that they function as a miniature Garden of Eden. Once a year, through the redemptive intercession of the high priest, that one Israelite priest would symbolically ascend the original mountain of God to enter Eden, and so connect God's people again with Yahweh in His garden dwelling. But this yearly liturgy also pointed forward to a time of restoration when all humanity would have access to God's presence on Eden's holy hill. But Israel had failed to keep covenant with God, and the temple had been destroyed. And even after their return from Babylon, the second temple remained without the Holy Spirit. Nonetheless, Jerusalem and the temple pointed forward, like a broken signpost, toward the day where somehow, in his faithfulness, Yahweh would do what he had promised. And so, at the end of Psalm 14, David had cried out, "Oh, that Yeshua, salvation for Israel, would come out of Zion." And so, Psalm 15 picks up David's cry and becomes a prayer for the Lord's salvation to come out of Israel, for God to send a person who can dwell in Yahweh's sacred tent, who may live on Yahweh's holy mountain. And what sort of person will embody this salvation? Verse 2, the one whose walk is blameless, who does what is righteous, who speaks the truth from their heart. This is a high calling. To live in the presence of God, someone has to be good through and through. Truth has to be our substance, the essence of who we are. Jesus himself said that it is out of the heart that the mouth speaks. And that precisely is what defiles us, because our hearts are impure. But David is talking about more than just not speaking lies. Listen to verse 3. This person has to be someone whose tongue utters no slander, who does no wrong to a neighbor, and casts no slur on others. David lets us know that this kind of person embodies truth so deeply that they speak honor of their neighbor, building right relationships in all they say and do, so that their neighbor is never misrepresented before God or others. Wow. Are you starting to feel the weight of David's questions? I am. This psalm weighs me in the balance and finds me lacking the substantive weight of a person of truth. I long to dwell in God's presence, but already this psalm leaves me utterly disqualified. You see, untruthfulness, like all sin, enters our being and makes us flammable. And that's dangerous, because Deuteronomy 4 tells us that God is a consuming fire. Without truth in our inmost being, God's very presence and life will consume us like flame consuming oil. This psalm awakens in me a holy fear and a reverence for the holiness of God. But David continues, the person who may dwell in Yahweh's sacred tent and live on Yahweh's holy mountain is someone who, verse 4, despises a vile person, but honors those who fear the Lord. David isn't telling us to hate bad people, but he is talking about who we lift up as our heroes, who we tell proud stories about and give places of honor. Today, Hollywood, Netflix, and our songs on Spotify tend to exalt anti-heroes, those who care nothing about right relationships with God or people. This can't be if we want to dwell in the presence of God. We've got to love what he loves. We've got to be a person who keeps an oath even when it hurts and does not change their mind, who lends money to the poor without interest, and who does not accept a bribe against the innocent. Truth, fear of the Lord, trustworthiness, dependability, keeping our word, caring for the poor, upholding justice. These are the things that characterize those who are able to dwell in the Lord's presence. David says, whoever does these things will never be shaken. I don't know about you, but I am undone by this psalm. I am shaken. I long for all these things to characterize me, but the truth is, I'm still a mixture. I've grown in character over the years, but to my shame, I cannot say that I embody them completely with my whole heart. And so, again with David, I cry out as he did in Psalm 14, "Oh, that Yeshua, salvation for Israel, would come out of Zion." And Yahweh has heard David and all Israel's cry. Yeshua is Jesus' Hebrew name. He is our salvation. He is the one righteous man, the first human being who through his resurrection and ascension now dwells with God on his holy hill. In Jesus, we find our refuge and our hope. And so I sing with Matt Mayer, Lord, I need you. Oh, I need you. Where sin runs deep, your grace is more. Where grace is found is where you are. And where you are, Lord, I am free. Holiness is Christ in me, my one defense, my righteousness. Oh God, how I need you.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the word.